We're going to begin today's seminar with some praman, which I will display on my computer. What I want to show you is that we have been neglecting a very essential part of the transmission of transcendental knowledge, and we are going to rectify that today, so that we can all successfully achieve true philosophical understanding. And what we have been neglecting, I'm going to just shortly display. This is what I said, praman, you'll see the evidence. This is a nice video presentation that has been made by the Madhva Vaishnavas in Udupi. This is presenting the life and philosophy of Madhvacharya. And you may know, I think you all know very well, that the Tattvavadis, they're extremely philosophically oriented, very serious. So, what have we been missing in our seminar so far? I'll show you. This is, what this is a kind of a cartoon sort, not a funny cartoon, but a cartoon of the life of Madhvacharya. And what I'm going to just play briefly, the scene of Madhva's meeting of Srila Vyasadev at Badrik Ashram. And then I'll draw your attention to a very essential feature of the Guru-Shishya relationship. So here you see, we can even have some sound here. And so here's Madhvacharya, here's Srila Vyasadev. You may not be able to see so clearly, but with the cursor, just here, where I'm circling, there is a banana leaf. And on that banana leaf, there are some sweets. So whenever guru and disciple come together for serious discussion of Tattva Gyan, there will be also seen some sweet present. And that's what we've been missing. Maharaj says. But, my dear God brother, Yogendra Prabhu, yesterday, he went to great labor to ensure the complete success of our seminar today by preparing a very wonderful transcendental sweet. It has a Swedish name, actually, Kola. So before we do anything else, we're going to distribute this to all the attendees. Hmm? A plate. Okay. Well, if this is going to be a whole adventure to get a plate. There's plates right there. Just give me one plate. Yeah, it should be banana leaf. You got those...
Should be facing north. Bark plate.
Yeah, bark plate would also be... But metal plate. These sweets are even the same color as the ones shown in the animation, so... They're not the same shape, round, but the same color is there. Right, so. This will be for Maharaj. This is almost banana leaf plate. So, please, pass this around. If there's not enough, we have more here. You can bring the plate. Pass the plate back quickly. Let's do this quickly. Can I get some water for washing?
Mm.
So, do we all agree that Yogindra Prabhu has done very excellent service to the Lord and to the Vaishnavas? Yogindra Prabhu ki jai! By your grace, this seminar will be completely successful. Completely parampara. As everyone's getting, yes, there's enough. Okay.
Can we, is it such a way that more devotees can go in?
Yeah, this is a...
Because there is so much space in this field, and also this one there. Thank you.
So today, we are entering into the realm of very brain-taxing Bhagavata philosophy. And this is also why the sweets were distributed, to nourish the brain with energy. And as I indicated already yesterday, even the day before, now we are going to go into the question of the living entity situation in this material world, because this knowledge, as we've been hearing over and over again, is intended to show us the way out of this material existence. But to see the way out, we have to see the way out. That means just the reverse of the way in. So knowing the way out means also to know how we got here, and therefore how we can get out. So, I'm going to start with some quotations. And on the basis of these quotations, I will make today's presentation. This is making too much sound. Oh, you can just turn that off and it will shut down there, so first we're going to begin with Taittiriya Upanishad, part 2, verse 7. Raso vayasaha rasam yavayam labdhavnandi bhavati kohe evanyat ka pranyat yad esha akasha ananda nasyat esha hi esa nandiyati. And this means that the supreme truth is rasa. The jiva becomes blissful on attaining this rasa. Who would work with the body and with the prana, or sensory powers, if this blissful form did not exist? He gives bliss to all. Now we can see clearly in the verse itself. The verse is very clear, saying that there is transcendental rasa, the Lord Himself, and the liberated jiva attains that rasa. But even the conditioned souls, they are impelled in their work by rasa also. And if there's any doubt about that, let us hear from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, in this quotation, is giving a purport to this verse. Not that he was actually commenting on this verse, but when you hear Srila Prabhupada, you can see he's actually elucidating on this verse from Taittiriya Upanishad. Srila Prabhupada says here, this is from a lecture, "You are captivated by this material jadaras." Jada means dead things. So this body is dead. The sense objects are dead matter. So material sense gratification means the jiva, and Jiva means living soul. That living soul is engaged in trying to enjoy dead matter. So, you are captivated by this material jada rasa, material rasa. There is rasa, Prabhupada says. Otherwise, why a man is working so hard to maintain his family? Unless there is some ananda, why he is taking? Nobody is taking so much hard responsibility for others. But children, wife, family, they take. Unless there is some ananda, how can he take? So the relationship has got ananda. But this ananda is flickering, is illusion. So in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami gives a very beautiful name of Lord Krishna. Akila Rasamrita Murti. So Akila in Sanskrit means complete. Complete rasa. So Lord Krishna, his form, his murti, is the very form of complete nectarian bliss. Akila Rasamrita Murti. So there's Akila Ras, complete, unobstructed bliss, and then there's the opposite, Kila Ras, bliss that has been obstructed, or Prabhupada calls it Jadaras, misdirected. But both are coming from the same source, the Lord. And we will now proceed hearing more verses to fill out our understanding of this. So Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-15. Chita kalv asya bandhaya mukteya chakmano matam guneshu suktum bandhaya ratam vapungsi mukteye. This verse is about attraction. So the stage in which the consciousness of the living entity is attracted by the three modes of material nature is called conditional life. But when the same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. So the difference between being in Maya and being in Krishna consciousness is a question of what one is attracted to. So now, why would one be attracted to the material nature? Why would one pursue this jada ras? Why would one become so inclined? Srimad Bhagavatam 3:32-19 answers that question. And this is a rather severe answer. Dunam daivena vihata ye chachutya kata shudham hitva shrinrati asadgata purisham iva vidbujaha. Vidbujaha means stool eating hog. So such persons, this means such persons who have that jadaras attraction, they are condemned by the supreme order of the Lord. The word vihata in Prabhupada's word for word translation is rendered as cursed. They've been cursed by the Lord. So, as I said, very severe answer. Nunam daivena. Daivena refers to the Lord himself. Vihata. He has condemned them but there's a reason. And that is because they are averse to the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have an aversion to love and serve Krishna. And you know, the jiva, tatastha shakti, that is his only power to choose. Tatastha means borderline, like the shore of an ocean or a river, bank of a river. So that is how the jiva is situated. And his shakti, his power, is to choose. So that is within the choice of the jiva. to choose to surrender to the Lord or to choose to not want to serve Krishna. So if that is his inclination, then he's condemned by the order of the Lord himself. And hitva shrinvanti asadgata purisham eva vidbujaha. Thus, they're compared to stool-eating hogs. Srila Prabhupada often would give this analogy, this example, that the hog, his nature is to be attracted to things, to so-called eatables, which are for us abominable. Human being would not... Everyone who has spent some time in India has had sufficient experience, especially in Vrindavan, one sees this. I was staying for a while several times I've stayed at the Govardhan Ashram. So there's flat roof, big roof, and so you can stay there and chant japa, and you get a good vista of the Govardhan Parikram path. A good distance you can see. And so many pilgrims are coming. And there is a field. So sometimes some pilgrims are going off the path to pass stool in the field. And so you can see from a long distance. You see, out in the field there are hogs. And when anyone goes off that path to the field, the hogs immediately are converging. Oh, dinner is about to be served. And as soon as a person finishes the business, the hogs are there, enjoying. So for a human being, that is abominable, horrible thing. But for hog, it is nectar. Rasa amrita. And how is that possible? Vihata. Divina vihata. That living entity in the hog body is simply condemned. That's his condemned situation. So, all living entities who have taken birth in this material world are actually under that same condemnation. Because we are seeking in this material nature happiness apart from Krishna consciousness. So, they give up hearing the transcendental activities of the Lord and indulge in hearing of the abominable activities of materialistic persons. I was fortunate in 1972, September, to attend the Bhagavad Dharma discourses that Srila Prabhupada gave in New Vrindavan for about a week. And he made so many countless gem-like statements of brilliant transcendental knowledge. One of them was that it is easy to know the difference between a transcendentalist and a materialist, Prabhupada said. Just see what they read. See what kind of literature they're attracted to read. He said the transcendentalist will read the Bhagavatam, the materialist will read the newspaper. So here it says that those who have no taste for Krishna consciousness, those who have this vidbuja taste, like the stool-eating hogs, they give up hearing the transcendental activities of the Lord and indulge in hearing of the abominable activities of materialistic persons. You see? They don't want to hear about Krishna. In fact, they can't understand what is there about Krishna that is worth to hear anyway. You see? Just like that man who asked Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how is it possible that you can produce a newspaper about Krishna Katha that comes out daily, once a day? And he said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's reply was, the spiritual world is unlimited. It is unlimited, there are unlimited transcendental activities going on there. So therefore, we could publish a newspaper every second of Krishna Katha. But of course, because of the material circumstances, it is just not possible. But as far as subject matter, it could be done easily. Like Anantishesh, he has unlimited heads and he is always glorifying Krishna, speaking of his name, form, pastimes, qualities, activities, and never reaches the, with unlimited hands, chanting the Lord's glory throughout all eternity, he never reaches the end of Krishna's glories. So, but a materialist, he can't understand, he thinks, all right, Krishna, okay, so we hear the story one time, that's enough. I remember when I was on Sankirtan, distributing Srila Prabhupada's book, sometimes I would meet an Indian gentleman who had moved to the West, were living there. So I would say, here we have Bhagavad Gita. And they would say, often say, well, I have gone through that book. I have gone through that book. Meaning, I read it one time. And that is enough. No taste, you see. They have no taste. And that is because vihata, condemned. So this is very important for us to understand as preachers. Because as devotees, living in the temple, hearing every day about Krishna, chanting at least 16 rounds every day, fully absorbed in this, we are tasting at least an atomic drop of that nectar. Otherwise, why would we be here? This is what Srila Prabhupada used to say. He used to say, of course you have love of Krishna. Of course you have love of Krishna, to his disciples. He said, I am not forcing you. I'm neither forcing you nor paying you. But you are here. So there must be some love of Krishna. There must be some taste for Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, why are we doing this? So we may, you know, we may kind of, in a way, take that for granted. We because of being internal in this process, we may think, yes, it's nectar. And but then you, in your preaching, you meet persons who are very jaded and very, you know, very dry. And there you're telling that there's that Bengali saying about the kokil and the crow, isn't that?
Oh, that's Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
That what is it? Arasagya kak chushe gyana nimba phale. What is it? Kokil. Arasagya kokil kai. Anyway, the purport is that the crows are on the Jnana Marg. They like to eat the bitter fruits of the Nimba tree of Jnana. Premamra Mokule, and the kokil, which looks the same as a crow, that likes to eat the Prem, Krishna Prem, the mango buds, Krishna Prem.
So, two kinds of tastes. And sometimes the kokil-like devotee meets the crow-like non-devotee. And in his enthusiasm, the devotee wants the non-devotee taste this Krishna consciousness. And he's a little astonished to see the non-devotee turn away. I don't like this. And we wonder, we think, well, but Krishna consciousness is nectarian. Who could fail to be attracted? Actually, that question is raised in the Shastra itself. Who could fail? But there, yes, those who are pashugna, killers of their own soul, or killers of animals, extremely sinful persons. Again, why is this? Because vihata, they're condemned. They're condemned to enjoy nasty, abominable things. And that is why they don't have this taste. But they have a taste, nonetheless. They have a taste, which we would find abominable. They're getting some taste. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, I know this from my godbrother, Gaur Hari. He's one of the very early disciples of Srila Prabhupada, joined in San Francisco, when Srila Prabhupada went there in 1967. And so Srila Prabhupada was invited to visit a farm, the Morning Star Farm, which was one of the original alternative farms. In other words, it means a place in the country where a bunch of hippies had come to live. Fancy name, alternative farm. But this was a nice alternative farm, in that Prabhupada was able to harvest from that farm some very extraordinary devotees, including His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who has now departed this mortal world. Vishnu Jana Maharaj was also gone from our sight. And a few others, including Gaur Hari. So, Gaur Hari, he did not join immediately then, seeing Srila Prabhupada during that visit. He was still involved in activities of sense gratification. But one of his friends joined, and later this friend came to visit him, sometime later, after he'd become a devotee. Came with shaved head and a tilak and everything. And so Gaur Hari was sitting morosely. His friend came to see him. Gaur Hari was sitting with a bottle of wine. And he was very attached to wine. So his friend was saying, "You should come to the temple. All, you know, friends from here have gone. They're all devotees. Why are you remaining here?" And he said, "I'm liking this wine too much." So then his friend, now Brahmachari, said, "Oh, Swamiji," they called him Swamiji then, to the Prabhupada. "Swamiji says, even within the wine, that taste of wine, that is Krishna. Even that. So you should remember Krishna. You should offer this before you drink to Krishna. Offer this wine, in your mind at least. Remember Krishna." And so Gaur Hari, he said, "All right." He said, "That much I can do." And he actually followed that instruction seriously. Every time before drinking, he would chant Hare Krishna, and he would think of Krishna, and meditate that Krishna is the taste of this wine. And he said, within a month, I was in the temple also, shaved up. This is the point. Krishna is appearing as the taste that all, whatever taste any living entity has, or whatever he's doing, that is actually Krishna. So, then, this materialistic taste, where is it being enjoyed? So now we have one quotation from Rig Veda. 10:129.4 Kamastad agre sama bartadhi manaso reta pratamam yadasit. And this means that in the beginning there was desire, kam. And this desire was the primal germ of the mind. So the mind is rooted in kam. Now, Chaitanya Charitamrita, what does it say about kam and prem? You know this? Yes?
Krishna nirpiti cha dhare nam prem.
Yes.
Atmendriya
piti vancha tari bali kam. That the, when one's desire is aimed at gratifying his own senses, then that desire is called kam. But when the same root desire is aimed at satisfying Krishna's senses, that is called prem. So that desire, which is aimed at sense gratification, that kam, is the root or the seed of the mind, the material mind. And yesterday I said that what we're really talking about, when we're talking about the material existence of the jiva, is we're talking about our life on the mental plane. We're talking about our identification with the mind. That's material consciousness. Materialistic person when he's saying I or me, he's referring ultimately to his mind. They think that the soul or the self is the mind. And the root of that is material desire. So I want to go into this point a little bit by looking at another verse. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 5:11-16. I'll just read the translation. Srila Prabhupada's translation. The soul's designation, Atmalinga. The mind is called Atmalinga, the designation of the soul. The soul's designation, the mind, is the cause of all tribulations in the material world. As long as this fact is unknown to the conditioned living entity, he has to accept the miserable condition of the material body and wander within this universe in different positions.
Very clear.
Because the mind is affected by disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity, it creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy within this material world. So that jada rasa, that experience of jada rasa, is taking place within the material mind. And this material mind is the ground of samsara, the motive principle of samsara, repeated birth and death. This you mentioned this morning, referring to something I said yesterday, so this is quite well established. At the same time, you also mentioned, I like this in the class, that there's a statement from the Vedas that Srila Prabhupada often quoted, asangoyam purushaha, which means that actually the purusha, the soul, is never in touch with material nature. He's always pure, but still he is falsely identifying with the mind and therefore with the body. This is a mistake. So this anartuyam purusha, this is from the Vedas, and the Bhagavatam has actually, Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's own commentary on Vedanta. So we find in Bhagavatam first canto the famous anarto pashamam shakshat bhakti yogam adhoksajya. So that this pure situation of the soul can be understood. One can actually see that the soul is never in touch with material nature by the process of bhakti yoga. Anarto pashamam shakshat. Shakshat means one can see directly. By bhakti yogam adhoksajay. The name adhoksaja is used. Name of Krishna. What does the name adhoksaja mean? So from Sanskrit, adho akshaja. So adho means to push down. Aksha means the eyes. And we hear this same root aksha in pratyaksha. So the eyes stand. They're the symbol for all sense perception. We often say, I see. Someone is telling us something. You say, I see. It doesn't literally mean I see with the eyes. But I understand. You see? I understand. So general knowledge is symbolized by the eyes. So patyaksha means to perceive or see through the senses. So this is the idea. Aksha is standing for all the senses, and ja means born of. So aksaja, that which is born of the senses, the perception of this material world, adho, is pushed down. Now, this is the meaning of adhoksaja. The Lord pushes down the illusory perception of this material world, this maya that we're now perceiving. And we can experience the removal of this illusory perception, this misperception, through the process of bhakti yoga. But lokasya ajanata, the common people don't know this. the common people are accepting pratyaksha, the information, the sense data, as being all in all. And that is the conditions and a state. And all these senses, where are they feeding their information, their data to? Into the mind. So material existence is really the mind. Huh? It's really the mental plane. You see? So it's the mind, therefore, that is actually the actual target of the entire yoga system. And Bhakti Yoga is the topmost ladder, Srila Prabhupada said, the yoga ladder. There are different systems like rungs of ladder, and Bhakti Yoga is at the top. So, when one's spiritual eyes are opened by the process of Bhakti Yoga, when by the grace of Lord Adhoksaja, the misperception of illusion is dispelled, then what is that like? What do we see while we're still here in this body? What is it like then? Srimad Bhagavatam 3.10.5, I have to thank Lochan Prabhu for reminding me of this verse, very nice verse. 3.10.5. Vishvam by Brahmatan Matram. This is very clear language. The Vishva, the universe, by certainly, this universe certainly, Brahma Tanmatram. Tanmatram means the same as, and Brahma means Brahman or the Absolute Truth, the Lord. This universe is none other than the Lord Himself. So, Samstitam Vishnu Maya. Everything, the material world, the spiritual world, everything is situated within Vishnu Maya, the energy of the Lord. So there is nothing that is non-Krishna. You see? We're speaking of philosophy in this seminar. So there's a type of theology. Theology just means philosophy with God. So there is a theology of dualism, religious dualism, which crops up in Christianity and Judaism and Islam, all these Western religions. And the root of it is Zoroastrianism. You have a form of that Zoroastrian religion in India, around Mumbai, the Parsis. They are following a sort of form of this ancient Zoroastrian religion. Now, Zoroaster is he's mentioned in the Rig Veda, Jaruta, and this explanation I'm giving you is coming from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There's an English compilation of his in the Gaudiya, two volumes of his talks. So in there, so Jaruta, and rendered into Western form as Zoroaster, was some kind of upasampradayic Vedic sage. And I'm not going to get into all the details, but it's acknowledged by Western scholars who study these things that he introduced this dualism, this theological dualism, which means there is God and there is an opposing force to God. This is, you see, in the Western religions, God versus devil, you see? And the devil is some sort of independent agent who is at war with God, you see? And the struggle goes on for aeons, for ages and ages and ages. And then, you know, their revelation scriptures say there will come a time, you know, when God will win the war. And it's very materialistic, you see. Very materialistic. You see, because in this theological dualism, the idea is that the only reason this material world is bad is because of the devil. So once the devil is gotten rid of, then everything here will become nice. And that's where this idea of resurrection comes from. You see, people had to die because of the devil. So we put their bodies carefully in the ground. You see, the Jews do this, the Muslims do it, the Christians. Why do they do it? Why do they put the body in the ground? To keep it there for Resurrection Day. When the devil is finally killed, then, or they say chained by the neck in hell or something, by the angels of God, whatever, when he's overthrown, then the graves will open. It's like a zombie movie. The graves will open, and the dead bodies will sit up and be restored if they were good. Now that depends which sect you belong to, of course. If they were good Christians, and God is the Christian God, then you're lucky. If you're a good Muslim, and God is the Muslim God, then you're lucky. And so the good ones, their bodies will be restored, and everyone else will go to hell forever. And the restored... Now, Christianity, for hundreds of years, there were arguments about this restoration of the body. This was a big issue. There were some few more intelligent theologians who said, this does not mean the physical body. The Greek word in the New Testament, pneumaticum soma. So this is, you can relate this to Sanskrit. Pneuma, we have words now like pneumatic, air. So pneuma in Greek is related to Sanskrit prana. And prana means life air. Prana also means sometimes spirit, simply life force. And soma, sharira, so body. So there were some few intelligent theologians who, unfortunately, over time, their position was rejected by... what I'm telling you is the official doctrine of the church. They rejected those transcendentalist theologians who said, this resurrection means... A glorified spiritual body will come out of the dead physical body. And that body will go to the Lord. Not the gross physical body, but the official position of the church since, I've forgotten the year, but sometime in the Middle Ages, they finally made a final decision in favor of the materialists. So the official doctrine of the Catholic Church, all Christian churches, is that it is a rotting dead body which will be restored. And they had many arguments about how it will be restored, because some people died when they were, when they were babies, and others died when they were old, and other people were chopped into pieces or burned up. So how this restoration? So Saint Augustine, saint with inverted commas around, Saint Augustine, one of the church fathers, he wrote that everyone will be restored to a 30-year-old body. And that 30-year-old body will live forever in heaven. Sometimes Indians ask, why you Western people become Hare Krishna devotees? That's why. A nonsense religion he had to learn and believe in. So anyway, oh yes, I go off on these digressions and I forget where I started. So the starting point was this Jaruta, Zarathustra, and dualism. So, yes, our philosophy is not this type of theological dualism. We do not say that there is the Lord and then there is something else which is in total opposition to him, over which he actually hasn't got control. He has to simply battle with because it's not under his will. It's not surrendered to him. So he's fighting with it for millennia. This is absurd. So this is not Vaishnava philosophy. So in Vaishnava philosophy, Samsitam Vishnu Maya, everything is situated in Vishnu Maya, in the energy of the Lord. But the verse goes on, Ishwarena Parichinam. The Lord himself has drawn a line of demarcation. The Lord himself, by his own will, has drawn a line of demarcation, and the the marker, halena avyakta murtina, is the time factor. Huh? So this is philosophy. We're going to talk about time a little bit now. Baladev Vidyabhushan, the great Gaudiya Vaishnava, commentator on Vedanta Sutra, has explained what spiritual time is, that there is time in the spiritual world. You hear that in Brahma Samhita, Nimeshyadivyako Vavajati Nahiriyatrappe Samaya. The time is there, but time is of a different quality than here, in that that time, the time of Goloka Vrindavan, is not passing away. So then the little pea brain wonders, then how. I remember meeting, when I was a new devotee and going out and distributing books, I met a Muslim man in Cambridge. There's a Cambridge in England too, but this is the Cambridge in Boston. There's a section of Boston, Massachusetts, which is also called Cambridge, Cambridge Square. And I met a Muslim man there who is, and Muslims, Orthodox Muslims, are actually impersonalists. So he was saying to me, so you say God is a person, this Krishna is a person, and he has activities? And I said, yes. But you also say he's eternal? Yes. Well then, how is it possible he can have activities? Because activity means you do something, you do some act, which you then complete and it's finished. You see? If you want to walk from this side of the room to that side of the room, you do that, and then you're on that side and business done. So how can there be eternal activities then? Because the very definition of action rules that out. And because I was quite a new devotee, I really didn't have an answer to that. Now I have an answer. By the grace of Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. So he has explained that transcendental time can be visualized as the circles one sees on the surface of water after a stone is dropped into it. These circles are always expanding. So each circle is a lila, an action, an activity of the Lord. So it is expanding. There is movement. But it is never passing away. The circles keep going out bigger, bigger, and there are newer and newer and newer navanavarasa, newer and newer circles always coming. And the later ones are just getting greater and greater and greater, more and more relishable. So this is how time works in the spiritual world. Nothing passes away. In fact, everything is increasing. You see, becoming more and more nectarian. Whereas in the material world, time is simply a cycle. You see, circular time. Passage of ages. Satyuga, Tretyuga, Dwapayuga, Kali Yuga. Again and again and again. Days of Brahma, nights of Brahma. Then the Mahapralaya, the whole universe goes. And then again, Mahavishnu breathes out. The universes are re-manifest. So, in his purport, so again, just to make Ishvara Parichinam Halena Avyakta Murtina. Everything is within Vishnu Maya, but there is a line of demarcation, and that is, that differentiation is time. There is time in the spiritual world, but it is qualitatively different from the time in the material world. So this is how the Lord draws the line between material world and spiritual world. The demarcation is time, the time factor of Vyaktimurtina, which is the Lord's impersonal feature. So the background of the material world is impersonal. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that, you see, this is very wonderful. Srila Prabhupada said that it is, he explained in a lecture, that it is the material world that is nirvishesh. You see, the Mayavadis say God is nirvishesh. But actually, the material world is nirvishesh. And the Lord is savishesh. What does that mean? That whatever qualities you see here in the material world, they will ultimately become zero with the passage of time. You see, ultimately the whole universe will dissolve into just Achit Shakti, and be held in potential within the pores of the Lord. And I told you, Shunyavat, Shukadeva Goswami said, that state of material, it is like void. Shunya means zero. So everything here becomes zero, so therefore Nirvishesha. These visheshas, these characteristics are not actually real, they're not actually substantial. They will not last in time. So this is an interesting reverse. Yeah, we are also near Visheshavadis, but regarding the material world, we're also near Visheshavadis. But that's the material world. And the Mayavadis have got everything backward. They say God is near Vishesh. So, Halena Vyakti Murtina. Now, I wanted to pursue this a little further. Yes. Yes, so Vishvambhai Brahmatan Matran. Everything, this material world, is actually not different from the Lord Himself. You see? But we are seeing in a wrong way. Because we are seeing through selfish material desires. So Vihata, this curse, means that the Lord's energies, the Lord's, Srila Prabhupada said, the Lord's energy is ultimately one, spiritual. But it has opposite effects, like electricity. Electricity can both cook, have an electric stove, an electric oven, or an electric freezer. So these are opposite effects, but the energy is one. So when we develop this calm, when we have this calm as the root of our thinking, then for us, the Lord's energies act materially. And therefore we are perceiving this material world instead of understanding that this is nothing else than the Lord and His energies. So, I wanted to go in a little bit to the question of our mental state here in this material world. We find in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras. This is in the course of an instruction of Lord Krishna to Uddhava. Uddhava asks Lord Krishna the question that human beings, it's an interesting question, he says human beings, just by dint of being in this human body and having a human mind, they can understand that material life is futile. There are many poets and philosophers, mundane poets. One of my favorite poems before I became a devotee was a poem by a British poet named Matthew Arnold. And it has this, I don't know if I can remember it, but it has that line that we are here as if on a darkling plain where ignorant armies clash by night. You ever heard that poem? Okay. Anyway, it's a very nice poem. And what he's writing about, that in this world, there is actually no hope. There is no joy. There is nothing to look forward at all. Everything, and yes, we are here as if on a dark field of battle, where ignorant armies in the middle of the night are fighting, not knowing what they're doing, just blindly killing one another. So this is an example. This is just some mundane poet of the 1900s. But he gives this very pessimistic outlook about our prospects of ever being happy in this world. And you find many, many such more serious thinkers come to this conclusion. So Buddha's question is, human beings can understand, human beings can see, like Prabhupada said, you can see your grandfather, grandmother have died, all of your ancestors have died, so what will happen to us? We will also die. You see? Everyone can see that everything in this world is temporary. Yet Uddhava says to Lord Krishna, still, these human beings go on trying to enjoy. He says, acting just like dogs or goats. So, why is this? And so, in the course of the Lord's answer to this question, he tells of a visit of the four Kumaras to their father, Lord Brahma. And they asked Brahma, because these four sages are always discussing deep philosophical issues, so they asked Lord Brahma this question, that if the purpose of human life is liberation, is to become liberated from this world, then guneshu avishate cheto gunas chetasi cha prabhu katam anonya santyago mamukshya atatirshayo. This means that if our purpose is liberation, then why is this mind so much absorbed in sense objects? And why do the sense objects penetrate the mind? For instance, in the form of memory. You see, one may try to live in a pure environment, just like we live in the temple to stay free of the lustful influence of materialistic society. But we find that the sense objects have penetrated, permeated our mind, because memories are still there and they give us trouble. Huh? So the Kumaras, the essence of their question is that one in yoga, in spiritual discipline, as I said before, the whole aim of the yoga system is the mind. The whole, you can say, laboratory, workshop of yoga is really the mind. So then how is it, how is liberation possible when we have a mind which is practically defined by the sense objects? See, look at it this way. How can you imagine a mind? How can you imagine, think of the mind if you removed all sense objects? What would be left if there was no sight or no sound, or no taste or no feeling or no smell? What would be left then? You see? Because the mind interacts with these things. The mental functions are in relationship to these tanmatras, these sense perceptions, sense objects. So this is their question. This is the kind of mind we have. You're Brahma, you're the creator. So this is the kind of mind you've given us. And yet, the Vedas, which you have also given, have said that the whole goal of life is liberation. So how is it possible with this kind of mind? So Brahma, he thought about this question for a long time, and he couldn't answer. And Lord Krishna comments, because he himself was so caught up in his own work of creation. You see, this is the thing. He is involved with this universe as the creator. This is his dharma. So he also began to think, yes, how is it possible? But because the Supreme Lord, he does not like his representative, Lord Brahma, who's the acharya of the whole universe, to be baffled. So he appeared there in the form of the Hamsa avatar, the Lord's form as a transcendental white swan. And so he answered the Kumara's question. And let us hear this answer, for it is very instructive in helping us to understand how the Lord is everything, and yet there is an apparent difference here between the material experience of this material world and Krishna consciousness. So he says, manasa vachasa drishtya grihyate anyar epinvya aham eva namato anyad. Iti Budhyadvam Anjasa. Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone, and nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. So, in this sense, then this problem is simply due to a poor fund of knowledge. This problem of how to control the mind, which is more or less defined by sense objects. The Lord here is saying, the mind, the sense, all of this is me. All of this is my energy. Huh? Yet, then in the next verse, he says, my dear sons, yes, it is true. The mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. So in the first verse, the Lord seemed to be saying, everything is me. And then in the second verse, he's telling them, you're not this mind, and you're not the sense objects. You are part and parcel of me. So, you know, so then the finger starts to scratch the head. And so the answer is, there are actually two states of mind. And this is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11, Verse 8. So, here we learn, I have to get back to that. Yes, here we learn that there are two states of mind. One is called tattva and the other is called vritti. So Srila Prabhupada translates tattva as the original position of the mind. Tattva, as you know, otherwise is understood to mean truth. The true mind. And that is the spiritual mind. And then there is vritti. I'm going to be explaining that a bit more. That means the mind absorbed in the organic functions of this material body. The mind which is involved with material sense gratification. That is vritti. And this verse is giving the example of a lamp, a ghee lamp. So when the ghee and the wick and everything is in nice order, clean, then the lamp, the fire burns very nicely. It gives light, illumination, dispels the darkness. But when there is some impurity within the ghee, for example, or if the wick is not of a nice substance, then the flame will be weak, will sputter, will not give nice light, and also create a lot of smoke and blacken the lamp. So the effect is actually opposite. You see, so there are these two states of the mind. Srila Prabhupada, if you have any doubt, let's hear what Srila Prabhupada says. This is a letter to Mrs. Klein from 1969. Srila Prabhupada writes, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that Krishna is the original consciousness and the center of all psychological movement, namely, thinking, feeling, and willing. We are all parts and parcels of the supreme thinking, feeling, and willing. But our present thinking, feeling, and willing, being contaminated by the cloud of ignorance, we are thinking and feeling and willing in a perverted way. So here, Srila Prabhupada confirms that there are two states of mind, two conditions of mind. The original. And the supreme original mental state is seen in Krishna himself. Thinking, feeling, and Srila Prabhupada says these are the movements of psychology. This is the movements of the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing. So there's the original pure thinking, feeling, and willing, and there's the perverted form of that. So further reference. Srila Prabhupada writes from a purport, Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 26, Text 23-24. Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, not only must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful any inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. This fall down is due to false ego. From the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. We cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. Factually, there is always the chance that this will happen, and therefore one has to be very careful. False ego is the basic principle for all material activities which are executed in the modes of material nature. As soon as one deviates from pure Krishna consciousness, he increases his entanglement in material reaction. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest. So this last sentence, Srila Prabhupada is referring to this vritti state of the mind. And he says, the origin of it is the false ego, which arises from pure consciousness. Now, false ego, what is that? What mode of nature? Tamogun. And who is the Tamoguna avatar? Lord Shiva. And who is the personality of time? Lord Shiva. Kala Bhairava. Srila Prabhupada says, the creative energy, which is coming from the Lord's glance, by which the cycle of creation, maintenance, destruction within the material world is initiated, that creative energy is Goddess Kali. And her consort is Kala. And that is Lord Shiva. So now you see a very nice package here. We heard that the Lord demarcates between the material realm and spiritual realm by time. Material time, Kala Bhairava, Lord Shiva, is also the Lord of the false ego. And it's because of false ego that we develop the material mind. And then Prabhupada says material mind is the basis of material existence. You see? Is that clear?
Yes.
Yes? Is that really clear?
Yes.
Yes? Has to be digested.
We have to consider it with our minds.
Okay. Philosophy is the process of rising above the mind by using the mind. All right. So now, having covered that, the mind, we want to go back to our... Oh no, here's something, here's some nectar. After all that... Young. We have some nectar. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are beautiful verses which are in glorification of the divine couple. Actually, Sri Sri Lakshmi Narayan, but Srila Prabhupada said there's actually, Shastra says that. Sattu Shakshan Mahalakshmi Krishna Narayana Prabhu Nathaya Vidye Vedas Valdupi Muni Sattama. There's no difference between Lakshmi Ji and Srimati Radharani, and there's no difference between Narayan and Lord Krishna. So you can take these verses as addressing Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And so this is giving the proper vision of the material world, what this material world is, seen through eyes that are smeared with the salve of love of Krishna. Yuvam tu vishvasya vibhu jagadak karnam param yem hi prakriti sukshma maya shakti dadatya. This verse is stating that yuvam, you two, the both of you, the Lord and his consort, jagadak karnam param, you are the ultimate cause, the supreme cause of this universe. Yem hi prakriti sukshma, this is addressing Lakshmiji or Srimati Radharani. You are the Shukshma Prakriti. That means the divine energy. Shukshma in this sense means spiritual. You are the Shukshma Prakriti, yet at the same time, Maya Shakti Yudharatyaya. Yet at the same time, you are the Maya Shakti, who is very difficult to overcome. She is both. Huh? So, Tasya Adishwara Shakshat, Tvamyeva Purusha Paraha, from Sarvam Jagam Ijayam Kriyam Palabhug Bhavam. So this verse, because one may ask, then what is the purpose of this material world? What is the positive purpose of such a place? So, Tasya Adishvara Shakshat Tvameva Purusha Paraha Tam Sarvam Jagyam. The Lord is here manifesting this material world, and within this material world as the enjoyer of sacrifice. In the Vedas, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, everywhere you see that this material world is actually created out of sacrifice. There are many Vedic statements to that effect, and that is illustrated because Srimad Bhagavatam, being a Purana, is giving illustration. Bhagavatam is also Veda, but it is a Purana that illustrates the Vedic statements. So we see there that Lord Brahma created this universe in an act of sacrifice. This is explained in Chapter 2, I believe. In an act of sacrifice in which his darshan, he was having darshan of the Supreme Lord, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and using the very bodily limbs of the Lord as the ingredients of that sacrifice by which he created this universe. This is the explanation of the Purusha Shukta hymn, the Vedas, which is describing that. This was Brahma's sacrifice. It's a mental sacrifice. So he was meditating, having darshan of the form of the Lord on the basis of that vision of the Lord. Then he was doing his work of creation. So therefore, this material world is nothing else than the form of the Lord. No? Shukshma or stula, subtle or gross, but it is only the form of the Lord. So the Lord appears here as the enjoyer of sacrifice, and all of the dravya, all of the things of this world are meant to be offered to him. So idyam kriyam palabhug bhavam. And Goddess Lakshmi ji or Radharani is the very form of devotional service to the Lord. This is why devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, because it is only possible to serve Krishna by coming under her shelter, because she is the one who knows how to please Krishna. And all the other devotees are following her under her shelter. They are also helping her to please Lord Krishna. Guna vyaktir yam devi vyanjako guna bhagavam tvami sava shiratma shisharandiyasya nama rupa bhagavati pratyastvama pashtayaha. So guna vyaktir yam devi, all the gunas, all the qualities of this world, they are nothing other than devi, Srimati Radharani, Srimati Lakshmi ji. Vyanjako guna bhagavam, and the Lord is the enjoyer of all these qualities. So everything here is simply meant for the satisfaction of Krishna. Tvami sarva shariratma. So the Lord has entered into every sharira, every body, as Paramatma along with the Atma. This is how he is manifest everywhere. He is there within the hearts of everyone. Sri Sharinriyasya, and Goddess Lakshmi, Goddess Radharani, she has come with the Lord and is actually manifest as the bodies of the living entities. That is her energy. Nama Rupi Bhagavati, Bhagavati or Lakshmiji or Radharani, she is the name and form of everything. Srila Prabhupada says this world is a world of name and form, so name and forms means the goddess herself. Pratyastvama Pashayaha, and the Lord is the meaning, the truth of those name and forms. You understand? When we speak, the words we speak, the names we use, is conveying a truth, conveying a meaning, conveying some intended knowledge. And that knowledge, that truth, that meaning, That is the Lord Himself. So this is the vision of how, given in the Bhagavatam itself, how everything is Krishna and Krishna's energy. So, who has this vision? The devotee. Great devotee like Sri Prahlad Maharaj. So why would a devotee come to this world? You see, this is a material world full of deluded souls who are trying to gratify their senses. Why do devotees come here? So the famous Naivo Dvije verse. Naivo Dvije Paraduratya Vaitaranyastvadvirya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chito. So Chetato Vimukha Chetasa Indriyata Mayasukaya Bharam Udvahato Vimudham. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. So we have given this vision of what the material world really is, and the pure devotee actually sees that, because wherever he may be, he is always remembering Krishna. So again, why is he here? My concern is only for the fools and rascals. Maya Sukaya, those who are trying to enjoy this illusory material world. They are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. Maya Sukaya Param. Param means a great burden. Their enterprise of sense gratification is actually a great burden pushing them now. And so the pure devotee comes to relieve them of that burden. When I was a new devotee, we learned a play. The script of the play was given by Srila Prabhupada. And very simple setup. Two devotees were holding a long blue cloth, and they were shaking the cloth like this. And then on the one side there were some devotees making kirtan. This was in the Sunday feast, see, so guests were watching. Some devotees were making kirtan. On the other side, there were some devotees in kind of like costume, and they were going like this, as if they're carrying a heavy burden, heavy rocks, and groaning, oh, 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 and just kind of lumbering around like this. And so they're divided by this blue cloth, which is the river. The river that separates the material world from the spiritual world. Vaitarani River. Virajajal. So then the devotees are calling across. Hey! Chant Hare Krishna! Come across and join us! Come to the spiritual world! Chant the holy name and come with us. Love and serve Krishna forever. So then you see some of these persons, they're, oh! What do you think? Let's go. And so they try to cross, but then their stone is pushing their heads down under the water. And so the devotees are saying, come on, drop that stone, drop that rock and just come. And so one or two would actually throw the rock down and come to the other side and begin to chant and dance in ecstasy. But then others were calling to those who were trying to cross, what? You cannot drop your stone. You received that stone from your father. And he got it from his father. And he got it from his... This is our tradition. You must carry your big, heavy stone. This will be an insult to your ancestors and your people and our society. And so you see those unfortunates, they, oh, all right. And then they come back. So the script was given by Prabhupada. Yeah, this was a play, Prabhupada gave. We used to do this. So this is illustrating the meaning of this bharam that Sri Prahlad Maharaj speaks of. This heavy weight. They're carrying this heavy load. And this is the price they pay for their sense gratification. Having this karmatmaka mind. This mind which is simply filled with materialistic plans for sense gratification. And they have to carry this heavy load of material life. So Prahlad Maharaj is expressing, I feel sorry for them, and therefore I am here. You see? But A devotee is not really here, that here that the karmis see. The devotee is seeing this world in accordance with this verses I just read, Shastra Shakshus, through the eyes of Shastra. Everything is nothing but Krishna and his energy. Now to elaborate on this, we have a nice quotation from Srila Baladev Vidyabhusha. This is a real eye-opener. And this is from his Govinda Bhasya. This is a real eye-opener, particularly about that question about the origin of the jiva, and were we ever with Krishna, or we never were with Krishna, etc., etc. So, just have to find that. Here it is. It's a long Sanskrit quote, I won't read the Sanskrit, but the translation is, there are six kinds of transformation, vikara, that living entities undergo in material existence. And these six transformations are birth, growth, sustenance, reproduction, dwindling, and death. I might add here that from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the mind is called vikara atmika. Vikara atmika. So the mind's nature is to undergo vikara or transformation. This is why we heard Srila Prabhupada said, you cannot argue about how the false ego arises from pure consciousness. Because there is a pure mind, and even the pure mind is undergoing, this vikara means also thinking, feeling, and willing. So you see, there is a transformation of thought going on even in the pure mind. So what happens then is that this vikara gets out of control. You see? This movement of the mind, for some unfortunate living entities, it moves away from Krishna. And this is what Srila Prabhupada describes as the appearance of the false ego. And that's why Srila Prabhupada says, one has to be very careful. One has to be very careful, particularly about the mind, how the mind is acting. We have to be very observant. We have to endeavor to keep... This is Krishna consciousness. You see, going back to Godhead is not a process of Krishna unconsciousness. That you just kind of, you know, lay back and with your hand in a bead bag and, you know, Krishna and everything will be done, you know, and you just space out and here comes some maha, okay. Krishna consciousness means to be conscious, to keep the mind fixed on Krishna. Not the hippies and New Agers have this term, awful term, bliss out. See, to bliss out means you're experiencing some kind of bliss, ananda. But then that is, you know, that is an excuse for legislating the mind to go free. We see in Nectar of Devotion, where Daruka is fanning Lord Krishna. You remember that from Nectar of Devotion? Daruka is fanning Lord Krishna, and ecstasy overwhelms him. And what does he do? He controls himself. The service is more important than the ecstasy. He could have dropped the chamara and fallen down on the ground. Oh, Krishna! But no, he's a resident of the spiritual world, so he doesn't do that. In Bangladesh, they may do that, but those who are actually there, they control the ecstasy and they keep doing their service. Because the service is more important. Therefore, what does Jiva Goswami say? Paramas Purusha Sukha Matra Sva Sukhatva. That the only happiness of a devotee is Krishna's happiness. This is the happiness a devotee wants to have, seeing that Krishna is happy. And therefore the devotee is simply serving Krishna. And his own happiness, that's second. That's Krishna's trying to reward. Krishna doesn't know how to reward his devotees. So he's emanating bliss. Take this bliss. But even, no, we don't want. This is particularly the mood of, this is famous among the Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami. This is really the essence of his bhava in devotional service. That I simply want your service. He's an intimate associate. Rupa and Raghunath are intimate associates of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is also so taken up with their service, that she wants to embrace them and do good and Raghunath Das Goswami, Rati Manjari, in his Goloka identity, he is avoiding this. No, don't. I don't want to be your friend, he tells Srimati Radhi. I just want to be your servant. Don't take me as your friend. I am your servant. So this is prema bhakti. Not blissing out. Oh. And forgetting everything, including Krishna. So where were we? I blissed out, sir. Yeah, the point was vikara. The mind is a place of transformation. That's going on in the spiritual world also. But we must be very careful to keep the movements of the mind directed to Lord Krishna's service. That is responsibility of every devotee. That is yoga, isn't it? That's the essence of yoga. And so that is there in bhakti yoga. So this is not just, you know, some automatic unconscious process. And this is material, this is the essence of material consciousness. This is another key point. I say there are certain points in the seminar that I really would like, to impregnate into your brains, so that it might take root and grow. So if you really want to know the difference between material consciousness and Krishna consciousness, material consciousness is this automatic consciousness, because the machinery, you see, just like you see technology. Technology means a man becomes dependent on machines. And he ends up a total, fool. He knows how to do is press buttons. And then everything is being... I once saw a bed in Germany. We were shopping to furnish the temple. And we went and we saw there was this fancy bed, huge bed, like, you could land an airplane on it practically. Huge bed. And then it had a control panel on the top with so many different... There was a button you press for to make the sound of rain because that helps you sleep. And another button would give you a massage. The bed would... And so many things, dials and knobs and... So, this is the materialistic situation. They want to be enjoyers. So they're imitating Krishna, so they also need a shayana, a bed to lay on. So that this is given, yes, Hiranyakashipu, that's the point, Kashipu. This is essential to materialism. And so that bed on which the materialistic living entity lies is ultimately Prakriti. And one translation of the word Prakriti, according to Srila Prabhupada, is machine. The material nature is a machine, which is automatically providing for the desires of the living entity. And so the living entity surrenders to the material and goes to sleep, becomes unconscious. And therefore, jeev jago, gorachan. You are laying your head on the lap of the witch Maya, you see, and she's preparing to cut your head off. That's what she does. She's saying, yes, yes, come on. I have a nice pillow for you. Put your head down. I'll take care of everything. Food in your mouth, everything, massage, yes, yes. And then she's reaching for the big knife, the khadga. Goddess Kali has a big chopper. Yeah. Nice and comfortable, yes? Chop! And then puts on her garland. Another one. She has so many heads. So Lord Chaitanya is warning. Your head is on the lap of the witch Maya. Get up and chant the whole... So this is Krishna consciousness. And material consciousness means unconsciousness. It means just surrendering to the control of the material energy, the mechanical material energy. Letting Maya do everything. Just like in this body. You see, there's so many things going on in this body all the time we don't know anything about. We don't know how it's working. Where he's sitting, this is about philosophy. So it's about thought, thinking. and the brain is working to help us think. We don't know how this is going on. You see? We don't know how the brain is working. We eat, enjoy, it's going down in the stomach, being digested, going to open. We don't know how this is happening. This is the material energy. So this way the living energy becomes dependent. And dependence means addicted. Becomes addicted and conditioned. Conditioned by dependence on Maya. So Krishna consciousness means wake up out of that. And so devotional service should not just be a new form of the same old story. That you know, this is why Srila Prabhupada said, temple should not be a joint mess. Not a joint mess or another place. He said, it is not a free hotel for lazy and crazy fellows. You know, it's not just a facility where a bunch of bald-headed hippies. The only difference is that they shaved most of their hair off. Otherwise, the consciousness is just the same. You see, just laying about, you know, when's prasadam coming? Jointness, no. So this is Krishna consciousness. So anyway, yeah, we have to keep the vikara, the transformations of the mind, fixed on Krishna. Otherwise, we slip into these six kinds of transformation that the living entities undergo in material existence: birth, growth, sustenance, reproduction, dwindling, and death. This is again Baladev Vidyabhusan. Whatever is transcendental to vikara is called vikara avarti. The Lord, His abode, and all that share the divine qualities of the Lord are vikara avarti. The liberated soul knows all the realms, vikara and vikara avarti, and everything about the Lord, the source of these realms. The liberated soul and the bound soul dwell within the same realms. Listen to this. The liberated soul and the bound soul dwell within the same realms, but the liberated soul is not covered. Katha Upanishad 2.21 explains, there is a city of 11 gates, the human body, belonging to the unborn, pure-hearted Supreme. One who meditates on Him never laments within that place. Being free of that which covers the form of the Lord, he is free of the covering of material nature. Thus the liberated soul is free from Swarup Avarika, ignorance that covers spiritual form, and Guna Avarika, the covering of consciousness by the three modes. So, this is Baladev Vidyabhusan. He's saying the only difference between the liberated soul and the conditioned soul is consciousness. Otherwise, both are situated within the energy of the Lord. Didn't we just hear that? That both material world and spiritual world are situated within Vishnu Maya. That is what he is saying. Both liberated souls and conditioned souls are situated in Vishnu Maya, but the liberated soul is uncovered. Even though he knows this material realm also, and even he dwells within it. He dwells within it for the reason we heard Sri Prahlad Maharaj say. To come and compassionately deliver the conditioned souls. Therefore, he'll also accept the material body. But knowing this so-called material body is just the energy of the Lord, and therefore he's not covered. And this is very nice. The two aspects of Maya, Swarup Avarika and Guna Avarika. First of all, one's perception of Swarup, spiritual form, becomes covered. And then Guna Avarika. That means one is only able to see material forms, which are arising from the three gunas, the three modes of material nature. So, that was interesting, I hope. And now we want to go back to the last verse I wanted to... It's another well-known verse. Nirvittitarsay upagiyamana bhava ausirat shrutta mano abhiramat ka uttama shloka gunanuvara puman virajeta vina pushagnat. So, glorification of the Supreme Personality of God is performed in the parampara system, that is, as it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false, temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. What did we remember? when we were talking about these two different kinds of taste. What is a materialistic taste? They glorify materialistic persons. And they're not interested in hearing the glories of the Lord. So those who are nivritta tarshar, who have no material desire, in other words, whose consciousness are pure, free of this covering of lust, then they're actually relishing the glorification, upagiyamana, the glorification of Krishna. They're taking relish from that. So what about the others? What about those who are vihata, condemned? Bhava ausarat shrotramano bhimana. Ausadi means medicine. For them, it is medicine. You see, it may be bitter. You know, Rupa Goswami gives that example of jaundice. Someone has jaundice, then that which is naturally sweet, you put on your tongue, it tastes bitter. Anyone had jaundice here? I had it once.
Yeah.
You had it, you must have had it. And what is the cure, the traditional cure? Is you take sweets. So I remember this. Like for 2 weeks I was taking, every morning, I was in Switzerland. I'd come from India and I was in Geneva, Switzerland. And that's where the jaundice struck because it incubates for a little while. So I didn't know I had it while I was in India. When I reached Switzerland, then suddenly one morning I looked in the mirror and I was yellow. My eyes were yellow and I was feverish. Fever and chills. Aches and pains. Couldn't even move sometimes. And so they started bringing me the maha plate. The temple president that time, he was very miserly with the maha. He, if only for guests, he would always personally collect it off the altar himself after Mangal Arti and take it to his room and lock it up. And he never liked to give it to devotees because that was for guests. He would give them the maha when they come and visit him. But to me, he had to give the maha very grudgingly. So every morning I was getting the plate. But it wasn't sense gratification at all. It tasted so bitter. So I was eating this bitter maha for 2 weeks. And then one day, it began to taste sweet. You see, and he noticed that. It's tasting sweet? Yes, I think I'm getting cured. Oh! So then the next morning, he again brought a plate. He brought a plate, he set it down, and I reached, and then I picked. And what he had done, he had filled the plate with typewriter erasers. You see, when you type, there's this type of eraser which is white and square, kind of looks like sandesh. So he piled up the plate with typewriter erasers. And I was picking up. And then he was laughing at me. You're not getting any more sweets. You can chew on these if you want. Those are the old days. But this is the cure. One should take the sweet. It means one should take the holy name of the Lord, even though we don't have taste. And it acts as medicine. And as the taste comes, that is showing that one is getting the cure. So, therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord? Who would fail to be attracted to this? Vina Pashugnat, a killer of the soul, except a butcher or one who is killing his own self. Someone who is very determined. Asura, the word asura, actually. Asura. Gatasum, agatasum. So, asu refers to this life, and ra. Ramyate, to enjoy. So this is an explanation of the word asura. One who is dedicated to enjoy this body, this one life, is an asura. So someone who's just convinced happiness, that means sense gratification and nothing else. So he's pasugnat, he's busy killing himself. And even though devotees tell him, Stop this nonsense, Chant Hare Krishna, he'll not listen. So he'll fail to be attracted. So, it is now 11:44. This is an introduction. You may have thought that this was quite packed up, condensed, but this is only the introduction. We're going farther into this tomorrow. But tomorrow we will actually go from this into the unfolding of the material creation. What we are trying to, what we tried to establish today, is the consciousness, the basic consciousness of materialism. That shift of consciousness from transcendence to materialism. What it is and how it takes place. So I hope that we've been able to shed some light on that. And then tomorrow we will now we will look at the consequences that follow. How the creation comes out as the reciprocation of the Lord's energies with that consciousness. Okay, anything? Yes.
Could you please once again read this translation about from Srimad Bhagavatam, six cantos, when Lakshmiji is described as the diamond form in this world, and Lord is described as the meaning.
Nama Rupa Bhagavati Pratyastvama Pashaya. Yes, Nama Rupa Bhagavati, this is the name of the Lord's consort, Bhagavan Bhagavati. Bhagavati, so Lakshmi, Srimati Radharani, Nama Rupa. So all names and forms of this world, as I said, Srila Prabhupada says, names and forms. This is the world of name and form. So Nama Rupa, that is all the energy of Bhagavati. And Pratyastvama Pashreha. Name and form is conveying some truth. Like language conveys some truth, knowledge. Form also. Form is based on the Lord's form. So the meaning or truth or experience that we get from names and forms, that is coming from the Lord Himself. So it's like you said, ontology, morphology. You're citing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So morphology means morpha, means from Greek, means form. So there's morphology and ontology from Greek onto. Onto means that which is, the reality. You see, ontology means the study of, actually the study of reality. What it really is. What existence really is, ontology. So the morphology, the form of a thing, is conveying something, some truth. Just like the Krishna consciousness movement, it has its morphological aspect. We have temples. We have all the arrangements of this institution. That's morphology. You see? There are corporations. Coca-Cola Company also has big buildings and big staff of workers and computer link and business accounts and all these things going on. But their ontology or their message to the world is, it's the real thing. Coke, which is not the real thing. It's Maya, you see. They're trying to sell something Maya as being real. But ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, has similar morphology as Coca-Cola Company, but our intention is to give the real, real thing, Krishna. Paratattva, the supreme truth.
They have another message also called for enjoy.
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 Motto.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
I don't know. Eat cola, skip cola, drink cola.
I would say the real ontology is money, money, money. They want to get more money.
That's true. Anything else? Yes. Oh, Maharaj, go first.
I just think, as you bring up Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I've been doing some reading many of his things. You're talking about the separation between the liberated soul and the conditioned soul is one of consciousness. So there's it's a very interesting topic. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the whole essence of my teaching is Drig Drishya Vichar. Vision and the seer and the seen. That to understand that Krishna is this, you were saying about Dharuka, he only wants to serve. He doesn't want to enjoy the experience of serving, even though Krishna wants to give that to him. So who is the seer, who is the seen? Who is the enjoyer and who is the enjoyed? He said, this is the basis. Everything I have to say is based on understanding of this.
Mm. It's brilliant. Very nice.
Just this one thing that we can have, just this turnaround of consciousness, which no system of philosophy ever understood this. Even maybe to some extent we could say that about even other Vaishnava sampradayas, because they pray to the Lord. We worship the Lord and He will give us liberation in Vaikuntha. But they didn't really catch this point as Gauriya Vaishnava, especially Bhaktisthan Sarasvati Thakur, stressed this. It's a whole turnaround of consciousness, that what we can do for Him rather than what He can do for us. Hmm.
Maharaj, you said that it is only consciousness which matters, otherwise the energy is same, as electricity works in different ways. So then this body, what it is? It's real or it's like imagination, as the Mayavadis say, everything is imagination? Means, does it really exist or it's just in the consciousness that it exists?
It exists. Because it exists really, although temporarily, if you take it as Krishna's energy manifested as an opportunity, as a means to serve Him, then that is the tattva of this body, that is the reality of this body, if it is used in devotional service. That means the effect of the activities of this body will not perish. The effect will be eternal. Because what we do in this body is always yielding some fruit. The question is whether the fruit will be eternal, therefore real, or the fruit will be temporary or unreal. So yes, the body is real if it is used in devotional service. But not eternal. Because this comes back to that point. What is the line of demarcation between the material world and spiritual world? It is time, you see. So, this is the material world because everything here is temporary. But that is the arrangement of the Lord Himself. We're His devotees. So, alright, this is the condition in which we have to serve Him. Alright, we go on serving, even in this temporary world. Because the fruit, in any case, is eternal. Yeah.
You explained that Lord Shiva is personally in charge for time. He's carrying the function of separating his person. Can you explain his position of Sadashiva? For some reason, it's slightly confusing, looks like acting difficult.
Yeah, that is Sadashiva. Sadashiva is. He is the the custodian, one might say. Might say, or the watchman on the border between the spiritual world and the material world. So he has multiple functions. He's there as devotee of the Lord. He is there to protect the holy dham. In Brahma Sangita, it says that the holy dham, Goloka, is protected by Jyoti, Brahma Jyoti, which is taking the form of tridents, the Trisul. And those who are not devotees, who might try to enter the spiritual world by some other process than devotional service, by mystic yoga or whatever, they get caught on the Trisul. Okay? And they're just hanging there, suspended in Brahma Jyoti. Stuck on the trident. So in this way he keeps the rascals out, the non-devotees out, That's why in Krishna's Leela there'll never be a time when, you know, in the middle rasa dance is going on, then out from the forest you hear the roar of motorcycle engines and hell's angels are coming into a beer party. It'll never happen. Lord Shiva keeps them engaged in the outer darkness. Yes, and then he is all the jivas who are interested in material activities, they are invested in him. He is the ultimate father of all living entities. By him directly, the Durga Devi Maya Shakti is impregnated. And then he creates the miserable conditions of the material world. Actually, he presides over those miserable conditions. And the purpose of that is to, by that suffering, the living entities may snap out of their illusion and become serious about spiritual life. Prabhupada says Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga, they have the names Rudra and Rudrani, which means they cause the living entities to cry, to howl in misery. So they multiple functions.
Maharaj, you know, the Sadashiva is Vishnu Tattva.
He's Shiva Tattva.
He is,
Prabhupada said, yeah, he's in one sense non-different from Mahavishnu, yet he is also different. So he has a special tattva. He is Shiva tattva. It's an interesting tattva because he's the only one who can actually enjoy Maya. And all the jivas are trying to be him. You know? And therefore the Maya bodies, you know, Shivoham. That's their... But he's the only one who can actually enjoy Maya.
Maharaj, can he really give moksha?
No, he... what is that... is that line? Mukti heva...
Mukti
pradata salvation. Vishnu na samse. He declares that only Lord Vishnu gives liberation. He gives a kind of... You see, there are also sort of liberations. Like if one goes to Brahmaloka, that is also sort of a liberation. Because from Brahmaloka one can look back, all living entities are in samsara, but there's no samsara there. No one's taking birth again and again in Brahmaloka. So that is sort of a liberation.
You cannot give merging to Brahman.
Yeah, that is also sort of a liberation.
This much you can give.
Yeah, but that's not...
People go to Kashi to die, and it's said that if they die there, that by the mercy of Kashi, they get liberation. So it's said that anyone who dies within the area of Kashi Dham, he comes, and at the time of death, he whispers in their ear, Ram, Ram, in this way they get liberation. Oh,
that's a good point. He's Vaishnava. So in that way, he gives liberation. That's a good point.
Because one time Bhagavan Maharaj told that when he worship Shiva as a Vaishnava, he goes to Sadashiva Loka, which is first actually a spiritual planet, where he gets that. We don't know who is worshiping Shiva, but this is Vaishnava.
Yeah, if you wish that, I mean, there's the Rudra Sampradaya, and then they have an Appa Sampradaya called the Veera Shailas. And their mistake was to take Lord Shiva as God. So they're just Shaivites. So if one worships Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava, that's fine. That's proper.
Maharaj, quite often you refer to apasampradayas and some sahajiya processes. And I don't understand what is the actual difference between sahajiya mentality and neophyte mentality. Neophyte in the spiritual process, for example, Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, neophyte. Neophytes are troubled by ignorance, neophytes are troubled by weakness, but those are not obstacles if one takes good association, Vaishnava Sangha. And follows this humble serving attitude, then by the grace of that association, the ignorance and the weakness will be purified off, removed. But the sahajiyas take the process cheaply. That means even if they get good association, they take it cheaply. They don't take seriously what is being taught. They take some part and other part they leave. And by doing that, they're committing offense. Just by that. You see? It's called, they have this term, supermarket religion. It's like going to the supermarket with your shopping cart and, I think I'll take some Cheerios cereal, and you know, I'll take some orange juice and a little of this, little that, and then we go pay. So the sadhyas, they may be blessed by pure Vaishnava association, but this is their tendency. They take a little this, take a little that, and just by that, adding, Prabhupada said, adding or subtracting, meddling in their own way with the process, they commit an offense, and by that offense, they remain fallen. But now, fallen with Tilak and Kanti Pal, posing themselves as Vaishnavas, but fallen. And then, taking things cheaply, then they think they have knowledge, they think they can become guru, they think they can start a movement, and then that's cheating. And that's the worst offense of all. Yes?
I just want to ask you, because you just mentioned before this nature of conditioning, and recently you said also that the base of this material nature and people in the material nature is that they are suffering. But even if they they suffer so much, they couldn't realize that they suffer actually, and they're just helping. So if that base is suffering, so how is that they can learn something from that? Because every time they suffer again, so they don't learn anything from that. So they just continue to suffering again and again from one life to another like that. What's the point? I mean, because...
Well, in an intelligent person, the condition of suffering awakens thoughts of who am I, kayami, who am I, why am I here, why am I suffering? They become inquisitive. And so if they're fortunate, then they get good association, they get association with saintly persons, sages, who can answer those questions with real knowledge, Vedic knowledge. So suffering is an impetus, at least for intelligent people, to inquire into the meaning of life. If they're not so fortunate, then you know they go the way of mundane philosophy. That's what mundane philosophy is also trying to do, answer these questions, but they don't have real knowledge. Fortune, how can you explain this? It's like in mathematics, the X factor. That's Krishna. So, Ramanda Brahmate Kon Se Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Dad Bhakti Latavi. When one becomes fortunate, then by Krishna's grace he gets Guru, by Guru's grace he gets Krishna. And in this way the seed of bhakti is implanted in the heart. When one is Bhagyavan. Now how and when one will become Bhagyavan? That's the plan of the Lord. But the Lord is very... You see, this Hare Krishna movement, Lord Chaitanya's movement, is spreading everywhere. Everyone, millions and millions and millions and millions, and countless millions of people have gotten the chance. But how many take? Yeah?
Ramashi mentioned that, quoting Prabhupada from Bhagavad Gita discusses that between the difference between devotee and devotee is that one is reading newspapers, distracted by this online information, and another is reading. Could you say some more differences between devotee and devotee? Because what I see, many devotees are reading
newspapers. Well, I also have to say that here in India, one of my godbrothers was told by Srila Prabhupada that he must read the newspaper because he was involved in legal affairs and things like that, dealing with government. And so Prabhupada wanted him to be aware of what's going on for his service. So Srila Prabhupada actually asked him some question about some current affair in India at the time. And this devotee said, "I don't know." And Srila Prabhupada said, "You haven't read the newspaper? It's all in the newspaper." "Oh, I don't read newspapers." "You what? You don't read newspaper? It must be newspaper." Shut the door. At least he got the order to read newspaper. And he still does it today.
We should study. We should read the newspaper and study the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Well,
we may read the newspaper, but we should study the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah.
What I was trying to say is, Prabhupada gave that particular devotee. I didn't mean to indicate that. Therefore, everyone has an authorization to read newspaper. That I don't think that would be correct. But it may be, it may be necessary for someone's service. But if one is getting rasa from the newspaper, in other words, one is relishing reading the newspaper, headlines, sports page, funnies, and does not have attraction to read Srimad Bhagavatam, something's very wrong. You see? It's really a question of what one is attracted to. One may read newspaper out of duty, because one has to in one's service, but if one is actually getting relish from that and no relish from Shastra, then one is in material consciousness, obviously. Yes?
What's the essential difference between Shambhu, that Shiva and Rudra?
Shiva and?
Shiva, Rudra and Shambhu.
I can't hear. What?
Rudra and Shambhu.
Shiva?
Rudra and Shambhu.
And Shambhu. Well, there are Ekadasha Rudras. There are 11 expansions of Rudra in this universe. And in some, I have to say, this is not from Prabhupada's books, but some places I've read, even Lord Shiva may award a jiva with one of these Rudra positions. So
I believe that's in Prabhupada's books.
It's also there?
I believe so.
Yeah, it actually may, yeah. I seem to remember something like that. But I read it more in another, from another source, more explained.
There is a book written by one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples. You can read that. Shiva Tattva by Bharati Maharaj. You can read that. And you can tell us all when you've read it. It's yeah. Complex.
I will say... Of course, as devotees, we want to be very clear on the philosophy, but there's also a point where we're in danger of going too far in this sort of inquiries. Like, I've noticed some, when I was visiting Russia once, there was a devotee who was just obsessed with the Brahma Jyoti. He just kept wanting to ask me questions about the Brahma Jyoti. And finally I said, "Don't you understand the Brahma Jyoti is from Mayavadis?" Actually, that's why it's there, really. It's for the Mayavadis. So we should know enough to be able to explain to someone, but if one is like personally interested to really, what is it like in the Brahma Jyoti? This is in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gop Kumar comes to Sarashiva Loka. Then he has this strange experience of sometimes seeing Lord Shiva as the Lord, sometimes seeing only Jyoti, sometimes seeing himself merging into the Jyoti or merging into Lord Shiva. And all these things, you know, they just keep happening, these different experiences. Merging, coming out, merging in again to light or Shiva. And he becomes bewildered, and then Lord Shiva says, this place is not for you. You're a devotee. You go to Vaikuntha. So there's a certain type of, you know, transcendentalist who, that's where they want to be. Merging into the light, merging into Lord Shiva, sometimes seeing Lord Shiva, getting his blessings, some, you know, all this going on, which is very bewildering actually. So therefore I'm saying, as Lord Shiva told Gopakumara, this is not really for us. One should not be too excessively interested in these matters. Yes?
Okay. Just one nice point by Srila Prabhupada in the second canto about this. He said that for love of his pure devotees, Lord reciprocates fully with love. And those who are interested in his impersonal form, Lord has no personal interest for them. What a position that Lord has no interest for you. It's really this Brahma Jyoti.
Yes?
One more question. Regarding Swaroop Avarikamaya and Guna Avarikamaya. So I was reading, I just want to ask, what is in relation to Jnanis? Are Jnanis used from both of these or?
No. No. Jnanis, if you mean Jnani as Jnani, that's an impersonalist. So impersonalist is certainly under Swaroop Avarika because he does not know the nature of spiritual form. His goal is formless. He thinks form means only material form. And because he's an impersonalist, he'll again be attracted to material form. So that's guna. And he comes again under the modes of nature. Actually, he's never released from the modes of nature at all. This impersonal experience is just the most refined state of the material mode of goodness. You see? It's like if one goes far enough up into the Earth's atmosphere, then one will begin to see outer space because the air is so refined. And once, you know, then the sky becomes dark. Airplanes that fly very, very high, then they come to this point where everything is dark and they start to see the stars as if they were in outer space. But they're not in outer space. It's just that the covering has become so thin. So similarly, mode of goodness, there's a level where it's such a thin covering that Brahma Jyoti shines through. And they have that experience of being liberated. But they're still in the grip of the modes of nature. The example is of a cat playing with a mouse. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's not a nice thing to see. A cat will bat the mouse around for a while and then act as if, all right, I'm tired of this game. And seem to wander off and sit somewhere else and lick itself. And then the mouse gets hope. You know, the mouse is there trembling and notices the cat is gone and not even looking at me anymore. So then the mouse thinks, I can go now. And very cautiously starts to move and looks. And the cat, not paying any attention. So then the mouse starts to run towards his mouse hole. And the mouse hole is getting bigger and he's getting, I'm free, I'm free, I'm free. And then suddenly the cat in one leap is in front of him. Aha! But you get away, huh? So Maya is doing like that with these jnanis and yogis. She doesn't think that they're free. So this impersonal Brahman is Prabhupada says, last snare of Maya. This is, I said the other day, Yoga Maya Samavrita. It is Yoga Maya, but pushing away. You see? So because there's no no relationship with Krishna's lotus, the form of Lord Krishna, his lotus feet. Therefore, the attraction for the material form will again capture these people. All right, I'm going to stop here. We'll continue tomorrow, going further into material entanglement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.